Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WJLA 7 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
How do you feel about robocalls? Those calls that are annoying, but often made by crooks trying to steal your money? Or what about cell phones on airplanes? You want people to be able to talk on them? And for many Americans who live in rural or low-income areas, they just really don't have fast, high-resolution, economical internet access. Well, my guest today is going to tell us what the Federal Communications Commission is doing about these issues. Chairman Ajit Pai, the new chair of the Federal Trade Commission, and you've actually been a member for a while, haven't you?
That's right, since 2012.
We are so delighted. And believe me, I can tell you that you are pushing some hot-button issues with consumers. First, let's talk about something that's really dear to my heart, and I know it is to yours, and that is having broadband available to people in rural and low-income areas of our country. Because right now, sometimes the service is slow, if existent at all, and expensive. Am I correct in that analogy?
Absolutely. And first and foremost, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it and appreciate what you do every day to inform listeners around the country. One of the great things about this job is that you get to travel around the United States and see some of the potential in terms of technology, but also some of the challenges. And, you know, I come from a rural part of Kansas myself, and so I'm keenly aware that there are a lot of folks in this country who are on the wrong side of what I've called the digital divide, the line that distinguishes between people who have access to the internet and other advanced technologies and those who don't. And I see my goal at the FCC over the next couple of years to do everything I can for the FCC to use every tool in the toolbox to make sure that Americans have access to technology. It's increasingly important to, you know, parents who want to educate their kids, to patients who want a better health care, to entrepreneurs in small towns who, you know, want to be able to start a business but don't want to have to move to a big city to do it. And I see it as our goal, as I said, to make sure that we empower those folks with digital connections that allow them to improve their lives however they see fit.
Okay, now I know that you've done a lot of work on this area and you've spoken about it quite passionately. Where are we in terms of being able to deploy broadband to the vast majority of our country? I mean, there are many rural areas where do they have service at all? I'm not even sure about that.
Yeah, there are millions of Americans, unfortunately, who don't have any access at all, and millions more who don't have access to high-speed internet. And so they might have slower technologies, for example, but they might not have the high-capacity, high-speed fiber that folks in bigger cities have. And one of the things that I noticed when I became chairman was that there are some tools in the toolbox that previously haven't really been used. For example, we oversee a federal subsidy program that directs money, taxpayer money, to various folks around the country to build these networks. And I made it a priority to make sure those subsidies were directed more wisely, to go to unserved areas, places where there isn't any internet access. The other thing we can do is to streamline some of our regulations. Unfortunately, especially in rural areas, yeah, there's just not going to be as much of a business case for building out broadband since there aren't as many people. The people there might have lower incomes. And a lot of corporations think, well, you know, why spend our time building a network out there when we can improve our networks in more lucrative parts of the country? And so by easing some of the regulatory burdens for deployment, our hope and expectation is that these companies will start building in smaller towns and lower income areas too. And the last tool in the toolbox that I've been aggressive about using is working with members of Congress. Now, last September, before the election, I laid out a bipartisan blueprint for broadband deployment. And one of the key proposals was what I called gigabit opportunity zones for Congress to designate a geographic area as small as an inner city block or as large as a rural county. It's code and other incentives to try to encourage businesses to build networks and set up a shop in lower income areas, rural and urban. And you know, my hope is that they'll see it my way. And ultimately, when all is said and done and I leave this place, we'll be able to say that millions more Americans are connected than were connected when I got in.
That would be an awesome achievement because I know there is a large segment. Do you have any idea how large the population is that's not served by broadband?
Well, the latest numbers we had said that 34 million Americans didn't have access to high-speed broadband. Now, some of them might not have access at all. Some of them might have it but not want it. It's difficult for us to differentiate between the two. But my own guiding principle is that any American who wants internet access should be able to get it. And the closer we drive that 34 million number down to zero, the more successful I think the FCC and, frankly, America, I think, will be.
Well, there's something within the government called the Broadband Opportunity Council. Is
right.
that made up of various agencies that are coming together to work on the issue?
It is. That's one part of it. And another part is also that when I came on board, I started a broadband deployment advisory committee that works with folks like that, the Opportunity Council. And the goal here is to try to figure out what are the rules, the federal and state and local rules, that might stand in the way of broadband deployment. And are they necessary, given the fact that the number one consumer issue when it comes to the internet is that they want better, faster, cheaper internet.
Sure.
And so they're working actively to try to figure out the rules on the books that the FCC can revise or, if necessary, remove. And hopefully over time, that's going to encourage a lot more deployment around the country.
Well, this would help schools, healthcare providers. I was reading one report that said that it would even provide real-time weather reports for farmers, which could be something really important, as well as advanced 911 services. There are so many things that would be of advantage to the people if this deployment can take place.
Oh, without question. I know when people think about the internet, sometimes they might think of, streaming a movie or something. But I've got to tell you, the applications are endless. A few months ago, I was in a feedlot in Allen, Kansas, population 75. And I sat there in the mud, sinking into the mud, while I heard a farmer tell me that he uses wireless connectivity for precision agriculture. He's able to monitor the cows that he has in real time, figure out what kind of feed they're getting, if they need more or less of a certain kind of feed, and then he transmits that to the people he wants to sell the cows to, and they know that they're getting a quality product. And that's something that could not have happened without the internet. I mean, otherwise he'd have to do a lot of this legwork on his own and try to guess. And just that's one farmer in one town in one state, and just multiply that across all the people and all the potential applications. There's a lot of potential here if we just make the internet ubiquitous.
That's incredible. I love the fact that you're talking to people. You're getting firsthand experience about what people are going through. And as you said, you grew up in a small town, although I have to tell you, your hometown was about 10,000, about 1,000 times larger than mine of 1,000. So you came from a metropolis as far as I'm concerned. But I really wish you great luck on this because I think it's so important. And I know for my relatives who are in areas where it's very difficult to get internet service, that it would be a great, great release. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Ajit Pai. He is the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. Did I say Federal Trade Commission before?
Oh, I think you said Federal Communications Commission. So,
okay, well, I should have.
The chair over there is a friend of mine, but so I know she wouldn't be offended.
She would be worried, right? We just don't want you doing her job. Okay, here, let's go on and talk about that thing that just makes all of us so mad, robocalls. Now, I know that that you all have taken initiatives and that the Federal Trade Commission has taken initiatives in trying to deal with some of the issues of robocalls, but what is it and where do you see it going? Now, these are, of course, for our listeners, these are those computer-generated calls. There's not anyone on the line. And they say, well, hello, Shirley, this is Rachel. We want to talk to you about your credit card. Well, I think that just is so annoying, especially if I'm enjoying dinner and I get up to answer the phone, which I am very compulsive about, I have to admit.
Oh, it is such a frustration to me. I mean, I'm not speaking as a regulator. I'm just speaking as a consumer. I get them myself, and it just drives me crazy. And one of the things that we have made a priority here at the FCC is tackling that problem. It's the number one source of consumer complaints to the FCC, these unwanted robocalls. And thus far, the agency hasn't done enough, in my view at least, to address it. And so the very first thing we teed up on the consumer protection side was empowering consumers and phone companies to go after unwanted robocallers. So one of the things they use, these robocall scammers use, for instance, is a technique known as spoofing. So instead of calling you on what their real number is, they'll mimic a number that they think you're going to trust. Maybe it has the same area code where you live, or maybe it seems to come from a government agency. They want you to answer the phone, and then they think they've got you. Well, what we want to do is empower folks to block those unwanted calls to prevent that kind of spoofing. And in just the very first month that I was on the job, in a bipartisan way, we were able to get across the finish line a solution that would allow these phone companies to block spoofed robocalls. And we also allowed consumers to tell their phone companies, look, if there's a robocall that appeared to be coming from my number, I don't want you to place that call. Sort of a do not originate list, if you will, that complements the do not call list over at the Federal Trade Commission. And so our hope is that those are two of the solutions that will help address the problem, but there's going to be more to come. We're taking enforcement action. We're trying to come up with more rules to address this issue. It's something that I hear about all the time, and I'm really deeply committed to solving it.
Well, at Call for Action, as you can imagine, Chairman, we hear a lot of complaints from consumers about these calls and about the scams that they fall for.
We were just
dealing with one in the office the other day. It really is amazing. But you know what? You see a phone number. It may even have a name of a bank on it.
Right.
And you don't know whether or not that's legitimate. Well, I always tell consumers, do not answer the questions. If you think it might be a legitimate call, then you go call that service provider of yours. Do not use anything that person calling you gives you. You know, it's just, to me, that makes sense. But consumers are vulnerable. We all
are. Oh, yeah.
We pick up the phone and we see a phone number and we think, oh, my goodness, that's it. So now, the frauds, they're frauds that are originating now that pretend to be from the IRS, I understand.
Right.
Are there some other particular framework of these frauds, any particular attack that they take to try to rip off consumers?
You know, the sad truth is that the entrepreneurial spirit has no limit when it comes to these scam artists. One of the scams that has been popular is the IRS scam. Just a few months ago, for instance, the Indian government shut down 9 call centers in India that were preying upon American consumers. And these folks would call up elderly Americans, immigrants, and others and say, look, this is the IRS. You owe us $5,000. And if you don't send it to us and give us your bank information, we're going to take your house. We're going to arrest you. You know, the police are going to come immediately. And a lot of folks, even though they knew they'd done nothing wrong, if you get a call from someone suggesting to the IRS, you the hair on the back of your neck starts to stick up. And these 9 call centers alone were getting $150,000 a day from American consumers, just one
good
criminal
grief.
Operation. Another scam that some of the folks used, and the FCC just put out a scam alert about this a couple of weeks ago. One of these robocallers will call you, and they'll say something like, can you hear me? And if you say yes, they record that yes, and they use that as what's called a voice signature. And then they'll try to call, you know, your bank or your some sort of other utility and in an automated way. And when the time comes for them to say, okay, have you authorized the service, the scam artist will use your recorded
oh,
yes.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we've gotten some reports about that, and so we put a scam alert out to make sure the consumers are aware. But the number one thing that I think consumers need to remember is you've got to take control of that phone. Don't be polite if you suspect that there's a robocaller coming. If you don't recognize the number, don't answer it. If you answer it, don't say yes or engage the person in conversation. And if you do ultimately engage, be sure to follow up with the provider and make sure that there aren't any unauthorized charges on your credit card bill or your utility bill and the like. It's unfortunately like whack-a-mole in a lot of cases, but again, the government stands with consumers, and we're trying to equip them to take action against these problems as best they can.
Well, and this is one case where technology is not the friend of the consumer in one sense, because it makes it so easy to reach us and defraud us and to disguise who you are. I think that's the thing. And I know that spoofing is such a common problem. But so your regulations are going to give phone companies the ability, because in the past, they were restricted as to how much they could do blocking and how much numbers, how they could keep a roster, so to speak, of phone numbers that they thought were suspect.
Exactly. That's one of the things we're working on is can we create a database that will let companies know, okay, these numbers are legitimate and these numbers are not. And you know, if they see a number that's coming through based on an illegitimate number, an invalid number, they know, okay, we don't have to place this call. And that's something traditionally the SEC's rules didn't allow, but that's something we're going to explore in the time to come.
Because they would have a liability in that. Not only would they, with government regulations, but could consumers push back if they blocked a call?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that they are empowered to do as well. That sometimes we got complaints from consumers saying, well, you know, my carrier hasn't completed this call. And that's where the original FCC requirements came from, that carriers have to complete every single call. But we're now trying to distinguish between those legitimate calls and the plainly illegitimate ones. For example, if a phone number has not been assigned to a particular consumer, then it's pretty obvious that there's no legitimate reason for someone to be using it to place a call. And so that's the kind of line we're trying to draw here. Complete the legitimate ones and block the spoofed ones if you can.
Well, I think that's the most admirable goal, and I'm hoping you're going to make it a lot more peaceful around my house and I won't have to be rude to so many people on the phone. I've gotten beyond the point of ever being polite to a robocall.
So, good for you.
I talk back to them, but I know they're not listening. You know, I mean, I guess. I don't know. I don't wait for it to be completed. But at any rate, let's just take a brief pause here and let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Ajit Pai. He is the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, and we're discussing some really important issues for consumers. And one of those that I want to move on to, and I am simply sitting here cheering about this, that you have issued a regulation, I guess it has to be approved, stating that cell phones, you cannot make cell phone calls on airplanes.
Right.
And I think I just heard a wave of cheers emanating from our listeners.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's one of those things that, boy, it really touches a nerve when you're on a little tube of aluminum and the person next to you starts yakking away on a phone. And it was one of the most unpopular things the FCC proposed 4 years ago. And once I became chairman, I thought, you know what, let's deliver some value to the flying public that's unhappy anyway about the state of air travel. And at least someone, their fellow passengers, yammering away on the phone shouldn't have to be one of them.
Well, you know, I would think it would raise security issues, too, with the ability of someone to call someone who had mischief in mind. I mean, I feel better, but I think the real thing for me is the noise level.
Right.
I just simply do not want to be stuck on a plane flying across the country with somebody yakking for 5 hours.
Right.
I think that might create mayhem. I might do something terrible. You wouldn't want to have to lock me up. So.
You'd be surprised how many times I've heard that, even from folks who just email me. And, thank you so much. This reduces the likelihood that I'm going to be put in jail for assaulting my passenger for a phone call.
So, that's exactly right. So anyway, basically right now there is a block on cell calls. You're supposed to put your phone on airplane mode when you get on right after. I guess when you're taking off or there's at some point there. It's supposed to be on airplane mode until you land. So is there any way to police that to make sure people are complying?
That's beyond the FCC's jurisdiction.
Right.
You'd have to go talk to the folks at the Department of Transportation or the airlines themselves about it. But for the FCC's part, we just wanted to make clear that actually placing voice calls during flight is not not something that we envision being in the consumer's interest.
I would think not. Right. Now, I know that you've also been involved in something, and it's not something that I know that much about. But it means a great deal to you, and that's the video relay services.
Yeah.
Can you briefly describe what that is?
Absolutely, and thanks for asking. This is a service that allows people with disabilities, in particular deaf and hard of hearing people, to be able to make calls to one another or to hearing people. So, for example, what it allows people to do is make a video call. A deaf person will call essentially an interpreter, and they will use sign language, and the deaf person or hard of hearing person will convey to the interpreter what he or she wants to say to the person on the other end of the phone, and the interpreter will then speak to the hearing person and say, okay, this is what this deaf or hard of hearing individual wants to say. And it's sort of a way of creating a video go-between, if you will, that allows those people with hearing loss to be able to communicate. And that's been a great program for a couple of decades, but it hasn't been modernized in a while. And so one of the ideas I had was, why don't we try to update this for 2017? And one of the things improvements I suggested, and I'm glad my colleagues agreed, was for what I've called a skills-based routing trial. So let's say a deaf person or a hard of hearing person has a medical problem, and he or she calls the interpreter. The interpreter might not be skilled in the particular medical terms that the deaf or hard of hearing person needs to communicate. Some of these terms are really obscure, or they have a very specific or specialized meaning. So I suggested, why don't we expand the program to include skilled interpreters who know something about medical problems or computer problems or other technical problems, and see if that would help deaf and hard of hearing people better communicate their issues. And I'm glad to see that the response from the disabilities community has been tremendous. A lot of the companies who provide this service have been excited about it as well. And we're doing it in a fiscally responsible way. So that's just one of the many improvements to the video relay service that I've introduced. And there's going to be more to come. My goal is for them to have just as good communication services as anybody else, regardless of disability.
You must be taking your vitamins. You're involved in so many things. I don't know how you keep up with it.
I get a big cup of coffee here, that's for sure.
There you go. A little caffeine never hurt. One other final thing, and we've only got a couple of minutes, and one of your concerns has been contraband cell phones in prisons.
Yeah.
I think you wrote about this just recently.
I did. One of the things I wasn't even aware about until I came here to the commission was that a lot of inmates who are incarcerated in facilities are using contraband cell phones that they sneak into these facilities to place hits on witnesses, to run criminal operations, to threaten people, and to otherwise run scams against the innocent consumers, sort of similar to those IRS scams. And I've made it a priority for a few years for the FCC to do something about it, to try to intercept those phones or to try to somehow obstruct those communications. And as chairman, just last month, I was able to get, in cooperation with the correctional community and the wireless carriers, some proposals across the table, across the finish line, that will allow these correctional facilities to help stop this problem of contraband cell phones. It's a serious problem. I've met with security guards in South Carolina, for example, at a maximum security prison, who told me they fear for their lives because of these contraband cell phones. I've been to places all over, from Kansas to Massachusetts. It's a really big problem that no one really talks about.
Wow. It's going to require a number of groups to cooperate, I would think, to get rid of the problem.
It's like herding cats, but it really is a serious public safety and consumer protection issue. So I think we need to act.
Yeah. I really had never even thought about it until I was doing some reading on the subject. And I thought, my goodness, there could be so many problems that were caused by these cell phones. And, not to mention the scams that can be run out of prisons on consumers. We know that can happen. Well, I certainly applaud your ambitious program. And I know there's a lot on your plate right now, and I'm hoping that we'll have a chance to discuss some more of these things. Any last thoughts for consumers?
Just that if there's a consumer protection issue that your listeners are worried about, get in touch with us. So the FCC has a complaint center where you can file something online. You can also just email us. My own email address is ajit.pai@fcc.gov. We take it seriously to stand at the vanguard for consumers in an increasingly challenging time. And that's certainly going to be the spirit I embrace this job with, so long as I have the privilege of having it.
Well, having worked as a volunteer with your Consumer Advisory Committee, I really appreciate what you all do, and I do know that your helpline is very helpful to people. So I do encourage people to take advantage of that and go online and get information. And you all keep them notified on the scams that are going on, so that's a very important part of what you do as well.
Exactly.
So, and that really can make such a difference in people. And knowing that there's somebody out there who's listening, and again, let me just stand up and cheer about no cell phone conversations on airplanes, Jeremy. Thank you.
Thank you
so much. It's been a great and educational interview for for me and our listeners. You've been listening to Off Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Chairman Ajit Pai. He's the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WJLA 7 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.